Welcome to Smarter Collaboration, the podcast series that shows how intentional collaboration creates breakthrough outcomes. This series is presented by Gardner & Co., the Center for Applied Research, Real-World Insights, Pragmatic Solutions, and Measurable Impact of Collaborations. Led by Dr. Heidi Gardner, she is a Harvard scholar, best-selling author, and Thinkers 50 guru on collaboration. Visit gardnerandco.co. Today, we go to Hollywood and unpack how collaboration is stretching the creative muscle of Argonaut Productions and Rose Rock Entertainment. Our guests are James Burstall, forward-thinking leader and CEO of London-based Argonaut Productions. James is the author of The Flexible Method, Prepare to Prosper in the Next Global Crisis. You know his company from his credits, House Hunters International, The Masked Singer, An Englishman in New York with John Hurt. James speaks five languages and has a brilliant habit of collaborating with creative storytellers. Joe Weinstock is the co-founder of Rose Rock Entertainment. He is in smart collaboration with James and Argonaut, and Joe is an Emmy Awarded nominated producer with a track record of delivering unexpected character-driven series like Duck Dynasty, Assembly Required, and In the Works. Now let's jump into this conversation with Argonaut and Rose Rock collaborating on an enterprise for growth, and then enjoy an illuminating commentary from Ivan Matviak, co-author of Smarter Collaboration. Enjoy the show. James Burstall and Joe Weinstock, welcome to Smarter Collaboration. It's great to have you both on today.
Thanks for having us.
Excited to be here.
Well, it's an honor to celebrate your collaboration between Argonaut Productions and Rose Rock Entertainment. We bet it will lead to breakthrough results for your international TV and film production companies. Okay, Joe. James told me one time that he is never threatened by clever, creative people. He also told me that he loves people that work within their sphere of excellence. With that mentality of bringing out the best strengths of his business partners, how did the two of you choose to be collaborators?
I love working with brilliant people. My career is based upon finding amazing, talented people and listening and bringing my ideas to the table and finding new kind of hybrids, if you like, from a hive mind. So throughout my career in television, which is a very collaborative industry, it's always been a great joy to meet brilliant people who, frankly, are much better at what they do than I am. They make my work better and they make my life more enjoyable. So in the middle of COVID, I had heard, obviously, about Joe. His reputation preceded him. But we wanted to develop our business in the U.S., And hereby, this incredible new collaboration came about.
I can add to that also. I'd known prior to joining James and Argonaut and starting our collaboration many, many years ago. I was a buyer at Spike TV and then at Discovery Channel. So I got to know James through the pitch process and was always intrigued with his company and him individually. And the opportunity presented itself kind of unexpectedly during COVID at a time when I was evaluating what I wanted to do in that near future, and then got a phone call that changed my life and trajectory.
Good phone call. Everyone talks a good game about collaboration, but relatively few know how to do it effectively. And Heidi Gardner and Ivan Matviak have researched this topic for probably 25 years. And they've written books and they're doing this show now to help listeners do collaboration right. As our two guests today, we want you to mentor our audience by sharing some of your collaborative triumphs between the two of your companies.
For me, the starting point is always respect. Do I respect the other person, both as a human being, as a mensch, but also as a professional? Mm-hmm. So am I excited by their history, their reputation, their set of relationships, and just the kind of person they are? And if that respect is there, then that's a really good starting point. Of course, I need them to respect me too, because if we're entering into a collaboration, we're going to do some great things. We're going to make some mistakes. We're going to try stuff out. We're going to be pushing each other actually outside of our comfort zone. That's the whole point of collaboration. If you just carry on doing what you're doing on your own, then you're going to stay static, and it'll be the status quo. And that's not good enough in this world of constant change. We've always got to be pushing ourselves out of our comfort zone. So when you've got respect, and then you bring somebody into your space and you start a dialogue, and it's a two-way street, you can really do incredible things.
Yeah, to add, communication is so important in that relationship. And obviously, James being based in the UK and myself in the Midwest part of the United States, you know, the time difference can be a factor. But any form of communication is a good form of communication for us, whether it's a text, a video conference, whatever it is. But, you know, having that open dialogue. And to James's point, you know, a collaboration needs to, when it's successful, makes both of us better, makes whatever I'm doing to the next level. You've seen that across the board with many other types of collaborations, whether it's in sports, entertainment, business, that 1+1 is a huge value add, in my opinion.
And you know what? I think it's really important to get over your ego and get over a fear of not being good enough. Because actually, and you know, I probably did this in my 20s. You know, I might feel threatened by someone who's a big talent. I might think, oh my God, you know, they make me look a bit second rate. But actually, I don't think like that at all now. I made a decision in my mid 20s that actually great people are going to make me look better. And when you have a business model which reflects that, so we have a proper partnership and it's built into the business model of how we've set up a company together. If Joe does well, I do well. If I do well, Joe does well. So it's completely mutual. And therefore, it's not a threat. I want Joe to do his best work. And he pushes me to do my best work. And that's exciting.
Yeah, that is exciting. But guys, there's no single collaboration that's perfect out there. So we want to know some of the early obstacles that you literally had to get over, whether it was cultural differences or post-COVID work styles where people don't come into the office. So share some of the nitty-gritty stuff so our listening audience can understand how let's call it a startup collaboration works or can't work.
If I could just start and then pass over to you. What I thought was really interesting was the first hurdle, if you like, was actually doing the deal. Joe is a trained attorney, so very, very detail-oriented. So, of course, asked lots of questions about the deal. How's it going to work? And what about this line? And what does this nuance mean?
Yeah.
And some of that was quite tough. You know, when you're doing a very important life-changing deal, the detail matters. But actually, you know what? Although it was difficult, what it said to me is this is a man who cares about, one, the project, because he wants to get it right, and he's meticulous in the detail. And I want my business partner to be meticulous in the detail. We work in an incredible industry full of amazingly brilliant people where the stakes are very, very high. And it's a sharky profession. You know, it's tough out there. It's highly competitive. Dog eat dog, it can be at times. So I want to know that my business partner is really detail-oriented. And we demonstrated that actually at the very moment of doing the deal at the beginning.
Yeah, ultimately, it came down to me and James having a conversation. You know, like, let's get the attorneys out of the equation. Let's me and you talk. And I think through the process of the deal negotiation is where I really gained a lot of respect for James and the confidence that this could work. Because he was always available for me if I had a question that we just didn't need to get the attorneys involved. I wanted to hear it from James. I wanted to hear it from the horse's mouth. But yes, the deal making was certainly the obstacle. And it was like, you know, I had a job. I was, you know, happy there. You know, it was going to take something special to get me to take this leap of faith. And ultimately, you know, had other choices and opportunities at the same time as well. But James, I just felt like I trusted him. And it was the absolute right decision. And part of what I, you know, married into is a best in class production company that has many other labels on the other side of the pond that are all bespoke and best in class in what they do. And to be able to be a part of that, I think really elevated the reason why I was really happy making this decision.
That taking responsibility is absolutely critical. You know, I knew that Joe had many other offers on the table. Of course he would. He's a huge talent. We had a few other options too. So we want to make sure that if we're going to get into this, it's going to be a huge success. Life is too short to mess it up.
It is.
And life is too short to get into something where there's, you know, hidden agendas or things that are not being spoken about, hence the communication. You know, we asked each other a lot of questions, and that talking at the very beginning, of course, brought out all sorts of things and concerns. And, you know, launching a new business, whether it's on your own or in partnership, is nerve-wracking. You know, it's a big deal. It's you're taking on a stake, and, you know, you have family commitments and we have mortgages to pay. And, you know, these things are important. So actually, I take that process at the beginning with a huge sense of responsibility, because I know that I've got to make a success for me and my stakeholders. And I also feel a responsibility to Joe. He's putting faith in me and my group, and is going to be taking a leap of faith. And I've got to make sure that I show up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, life is too short. We don't have time for BS. You're very selective about who you want to work with. And you told me before, James, that it's about living with A-listers, you know, and that sort of says it all. Okay. You came together around a market opportunity. Which of you is closer to development versus production?
I would say I'm a little closer to development, because ultimately I'm the one that is going to go directly to the buyers to pitch the concept. James is intricately involved in all of the development and gives me valuable insight when I'm developing something or I'm ready to share something, and collectively we'll go to the marketplace with something that we're both really happy about. But I would say I'm probably a little bit closer.
Yeah, Joe's running the slate in the business Rose Rock Entertainment, and now also overseeing the whole of our Archon USA operations. We're actually in the middle of a week of a round of meetings in Los Angeles together. And it's really enjoyable because we're out there in the marketplace taking face-to-face meetings. It's great not to be on Zoom for a change. And those meetings, they are fun. They're frothy. There's a really good energy. And the detail, you know, we are talking about really crunchy stuff. Our industry has been pretty quiet for a while because of inflation and Ukraine and post-COVID, things were a bit sticky. But actually, the market is starting to settle down again, and people are looking for big, exciting new concepts. So I'm actually really enjoying the face-to-face time, and there's nothing like a kind of buzzy banter in the room to get everybody excited.
Very good. This next question came from my friend David Freed, who ran Mel Films, and he says, which of these statements is more true? There's a larger underserved audience for unscripted male skewing Heartland-inspired content than Hollywood realizes, or that the audience consumes more content than their counterparts?
I think the first. I think it's an underappreciated poor audience that doesn't get enough of television opportunities, which is what I'm trying to do also with the slate that James and I are developing is to satisfy that. I think a clear example in the scripted genre is Yellowstone, and looking at how that show, it doesn't matter what platform it's on. Generally the male audience is finding it, but it's a very co-viewing experience, you know, for, you know, husband and wife, or even to some extent the families. But I would say that is a best example of a male soap opera. And you look at the numbers, it's undeniable. And I think there's a lot of producers out there that are looking to replicate something like that show in the nonfiction space, and, you know, worlds adjacent to it. You know, the middle of America, I think, definitely needs to be served more. And I think part of what the issue is that the buyers are on the coasts and they watch certain things. And, you know, having moved back to Oklahoma, I feel like I have my own focus group of friends and family that are reminding me of what I should be developing. It's nice. It's, you know, like to be able to cast back into where I'm from. And it's a lot easier too, to go to talent and say, you know, I'm Oklahoma based, not Hollywood based. You know, when we're pursuing opportunities and telling them, hey, we'd love to do a show with you.
And that's going down really well. I mean, I think in business, you always need to find the gap. You know, where is the gap? So clearly there's been a huge political shift, and the US and the UK are really on the same path. Really, we've seen this kind of wake up to the world that, you know, the so-called elites in the big cities, and what about everybody else who've been feeling left behind? You know, that's not right. We've got to do something about that. And it's our job actually as broadcasters to take responsibility, to reflect the society we live in, not just to speak to a tiny minority of any kind. We need to speak to the broadest possible range. So actually there was a fundamental strategic purpose behind us coming to work together. Because, you know, yeah, I'm headquartered in London. We've got offices in New York and Los Angeles, but we are not currently based in the Midwest. And Joe, who has got family, obviously, in Oklahoma, and had been doing a very good job running his business prior to COVID, well, during COVID, from the Midwest, mm-hmm. It suddenly kind of made sense. It worked for you, for your family. It works for the buyers. It works for my group because there's a gap in our business model. And we are now serving the marketplace in a new way.
Yeah, paying attention to the middle of America.
Hmm.
What an epiphany. Okay, guys, if you could have made one unscripted TV series that could be on the air in the past that wasn't your own, what would it be?
I'll go first. I would say Naked and Afraid. Even though I was at Discovery Channel when that was commissioned, it was already in development before I had got there, but it was a great title. And what I, you know, look at that show, it's genre busting. It totally redefined the survival space, the survival world in such an unexpected way, with a great title to grab your attention. But then the execution of the show, it's like there's very little producer meddling. You know, you get the little, top of it at the start of the show, but then you wouldn't even realize that there's producers there producing the show. Yeah. So anything genre busting, I'd say I wish I came up with that one.
There's obviously a theme running here because I guess we're both entrepreneurs. Mine would be Survivor. I love that show. I mean, obviously I love the locations, and I'm a keen traveler myself. So any opportunity to go and wind up on some kind of gorgeous beach in the middle of nowhere is right up my street. But that is a very heavily formatted show. You know, there are all the beats that happen across the multiple episodes coming, you know, reaching a grand finale at the end. But I think it really brings out the best and the worst in people. And I think that's always fascinating when people are thrown in like fish out of water into situations. I think the gameplay is clever. I really like shows where you're playing along and you're trying to guess who's going to do this and who's going to do that. I think there's good human interaction where, you know, the nice guys, they do come through, and you find out at the end of the day what people can be really like when they're under duress. And of course, as a business model, it's a fantastic show. It's coming back again all over the world. So it's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you both for that. On every one of these episodes, we always try to get our guest into the middle of a collaboration. So here goes. Share your collaborative thinking around the plans to either self-finance and then sell to the highest bidder, or will you be bringing your network streaming partners in from the development stage?
Well, we work on some multiple different business models, to be honest. So you have to be fleet of foot and flexible. So some of our shows we sell directly to networks or the streamers, or indeed the social media platforms such as Snapchat. We do a lot of international co-production. I mean, we are a living, breathing international co-production anyway, but we do sell a lot of shows where you'll get 30% of the funding from the US, 20% from Canada, 20% from the UK, et cetera, et cetera. So we're positioning ourselves as a bridge between buyers all over the world. And then when it comes to feature films, it's a completely different model again. We have got a feature film in development, which is going to be funded through a very different distribution model, nothing to do with channels, although we probably will have at least one channel on board. So I think you have to accept that in the world that we live in, there is no one right solution. There's no one way of doing business in our sphere. So we've got that kind of open mind.
Yeah, I think creativity and communication, you know, words that we've used throughout this interview, Rick, are key to that equation, making sure that you're constantly communicating with the buyers and being creative about how you execute the financing of said show. And the world is changing significantly as far as how shows are getting lit up in a non-traditional creative ways. It's exciting.
It is exciting. Joe, I read this book by this crazy author, and it was called The Flexible Method. And I'm wondering how you see the flexible method at work in this collaboration that we're listening to today.
As a test, have you read
it? I'm on his bookshelf.
Yeah, no, I do. And I think, you know, the flexible method is of the essence, given where we are with this world and being able to adapt to a situation that is put in front of you. And like, you know, like, are you going to go down road or is there a B and C method to the madness of what we might be entering into? And I think if you're not flexible, then you won't be successful. And I think you have to, you know, and that starts with having an open mind and an appreciation for what's in front of you and how you're going to get to that solution.
And you know what? COVID has been very painful. We've all got our war wounds. But actually, there are silver linings, even in terrible events like COVID. One, it's brought about collaborations such as ours. And it's also encouraged us to really think laterally and outside of the box. How can we make programs differently? And how can we serve an audience, for example, in the Midwest who are not being spoken to? How can we finance shows differently using resources from all over the planet? So I do think that when you're open-minded and willing, and sometimes, you know, there's events that we can't control, they come along and they knock us all for six temporarily. But within that chaos, you can find new ways of working and new ways of thinking. And that's very healthy.
Yeah, that is very healthy. Thank you for your insight on that. Hey, Joe, when I talked to James before we unpacked House Hunters International, and how he has all these hundreds of producers and filmmakers around the world, and not a lot of people are having to travel anymore. Does part of that a business model apply to you, because you could literally get a crew in Montana to do a show or an episode, or you could get a crew in Missouri, even though it's very close to Oklahoma. But how do some of those elements of that fine working business model and fantastic show, how might that apply to you?
I think it applies in everything that I do and consider when I'm developing something. And I think picking up local crew is of the essence wherever the shoot might be partaking from a cost perspective standpoint, number one, because you're not having to travel folks in there, but two, to really boost the local economy that you're in and get the support of the community on what you're doing. You know, we're in full support of that model. And I think COVID, to James's point, like if we're going to make some lemonade out of a really horrible situation, we have, like, our entire industry has just changed as far as how we're conducting business. And I never could have thought that I would be able to have a successful production business based in Oklahoma, because, you know, most of the buyers are in Los Angeles, some are in New York, but it just changed. And I think Zooms, now nothing will ever beat, you know, a personal room conversation. Yep. But this works, and it's convenient. And, you know, part of it, I'm not having to drive hours every day in Los Angeles to get to meetings, and late to some of them because of said traffic. This is great. Like, it's changed everything, and being able to even like have work drinks with colleagues that are on the East Coast, just to catch up. It's been a boon, and it's been huge. And I think, There is a lot of other folks just like myself that have moved back home or to a place where they never thought they could live because we can do this stuff remote and do it effectively.
I think it's going to be very healthy, actually, for the creative economy across the U.S. Because, for example, editing, you know, you can edit any show anywhere on the planet. Mm-hmm. And you can do it from your home in Oklahoma, or you can do it from New Jersey, or you can do it from Iowa. It doesn't matter where you are. So long as you deliver on budget and schedule, we can all talk on Zoom. We can give notes and share and talk about the creative remotely. But that means that, you know, clever creative people don't have to be living in New York and LA. They can live across the US. And that's good. Like you said, it's going to build networks of people in all the states. And that's healthy.
Outstanding. Okay, wrap up statements by both of you, if you could, just reinforce why our listening audience should take the risk, surround themselves with smarter people than themselves, and collaborate.
I think collaborations make you stronger. I think they push you. And I think feeling an uncomfortableness can you know, push you to better. I fully thank myself every day for joining James in our collaboration and taking that leap of faith. Obviously, to each their own, but I think to get to greatness, collaboration is a part of that equation.
Personally, I would always much rather have 50% of something than 100% of nothing. And I know that when people have skin in the game, I had it myself when I started out, and my best colleagues have skin in the game. And it means that we are highly motivated to do our best work. We bring everything we can to the table, and we make, you know, our absolute best effort to make sure it's a huge success. And that's what we're all about. We want to make great shows and reach as many people across the planet as we can.
Well, thank you both for being on today. You're both so impressive. I know where you're going to be going in the next 5 years based on the answers that you gave. So we wish you the best. Thank you for being fantastic examples of smarter collaborators.
Thanks, Ray.
Appreciate the time and opportunity.
You bet.
I'm Ivan Matviak, co-author of Smarter Collaboration. On today's show, there were a few particular points that really struck me. If you listen carefully to James Burstall and Joe Weinstock, these are two veteran producers in television and film who truly care about tight communication and building a collaborative culture between their London and Tulsa, Oklahoma-based production companies. There's four observations I'd like to share with you. They built this collaboration to expand their television production internationally. They realized that their London-based company needed a partner with local market knowledge who could help them pursue a very different audience in Middle America. In our book, Smarter Collaboration, we talk about starting with the end in mind and then building a team of experts based on that goal. And in this case, James knew he wanted to serve middle market America. And from there, he found the right guy, Joe, to pair up with. Trust is also essential for collaboration, both interpersonal trust and competence trust. And they've built a collaborative culture with no room for ego. James and Joe understand that collaborations are an opportunity to learn and grow from people with very different skills or perspectives. And their approach is a really great example of our research findings around competence trust. To collaborate effectively, people need to understand what skills or perspectives each person brings and believe that that person is truly expert in it. Collaboration is also critical for innovation. For James and Joe, their partnership led to creative ways they chose to fund and distribute their entertainment. For example, they might leverage Snapchat for a new film or get buyers from multiple countries. And this really reflects the value of networks. When you have a diverse set of partners across domains or regions, you're more likely to generate innovative solutions. And the last one is that collaboration takes work. It's hard, but it can push you to better results and eventually to greatness. As James said in the video, you'd rather have 50% of something than 100% of nothing. And we have to remember that when we feel compelled to go it alone, efficiency isn't everything. What matters most is that you're bringing something of distinct value to those you're serving, whether those are viewers, clients, customers, patients, or another kind of group. All right, that's a wrap. From the Smarter Collaboration team, you can count on our curious researchers to bring you stories from all corners of the world and across a variety of industries and communities. So until the next time, remember that you may be able to run faster by yourself, but you can go farther with others.
Thank you for joining us on Smarter Collaboration. This series is created by GardnerandCo.co and produced by Success Made to Last Productions in Austin, Texas. Today's show was written by Ivan Madviak, Dr. Heidi Gardner, Rick Tokini, Christine Dunn, and David Fareed. Executive producer is Rick Tokini. Sound design and post-production are led by Heather Barnes and Carla Tokini, and the original score is from Dynascore. Our operations manager is Marie Ross. This podcast can be heard wherever podcasts are distributed and also on successmadetolast.com along with gardnerandco.co. Join us for another Smarter Collaboration program where innovating together creates breakthrough outcomes.